Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the kind of episode I've hoped we could do any time over the years that we've encountered a veteran who really wasn't properly recognized for the significance of what he did in combat. Royce Williams is certainly one who left us with that feeling when we heard his story 7 years ago. So what a blessing it was to see him awarded the Navy Cross in San Diego, a story that generated news coverage around the globe. His 1-on-7 battle with Soviet MiGs left his F-9F5 Panther pretty crippled, but he shot down 4 of those enemy aircraft in the process, something his congressman Daryl Issa has long felt should receive greater attention. That dream came true this past week in San Diego, but Issa wasn't looking to take credit for his years of advocacy.
The only credit I'll give is that the 100-plus flag officers and aviators who made this point, including the late Admiral, made me aware of it. Now, for all of you who have been at the VFW, you know that you go to the VFW and hear amazing stories, and some are true. When I first heard this amazing story, the Admiral was like pushing on it, and Captain Williams was saying nothing, kind of all shucks about the whole thing. To get him to tell the story, you have to ask and ask again. But it is fitting today that we do have the Secretary of the Navy here, because it was perhaps a little bit of credit for getting his attention, but it was his attention that made this happen today. And I want to thank him personally, because I don't think he gets thanked enough for the things he does that he doesn't have to do. When you're Secretary of the Navy, you have to worry about everything that's going wrong and answer for everything that goes wrong and that which might go wrong. So amidst that, the Secretary took a day of his life, came out, met with Captain Royce Williams personally, heard his story, and reversed 70 years of denial of the fairness of this award and made that decision on behalf of the American people. So that's why we're here today. But before you hear from the Secretary, I do want to mention, by the way, for the one soul that said beat Army. A lot of courage in this crowd to say that. Corporal Royce Williams is here with us today. Yes. The Army made him what he was, with a little help from aviation training. I want to close by saying, I opened by saying this is altogether fitting. It is altogether fitting that although it took 70 years and a couple of months, and it's a bookend of America's fight for freedom. 70 plus years ago, Russians, then the Soviet Union, on behalf of North Korea, their communist ally, set off to attack and to change the conviction and the belief by us that we could maintain freedom for the people of Korea and particularly South Korea. 70 years ago, because of Royce Williams, they failed. 70 years later, Russians have attacked Ukraine, and America, as we speak, in its own way, is making sure that Russia fails again. So, Captain, I know you don't always hear, so I'm going to talk real loud. Thank you for beginning a fight that never ends, the fight for freedom. God bless.
The Army reference there from Daryl Issa has to do with Royce Williams' brief tenure in the Minnesota National Guard before joining the Navy. Let's resume the story now from Captain Williams' perspective. It was November 18, 1952. He had taken off from the aircraft carrier USS Oriskany with 3 other planes in windy, snowy conditions to provide a combat air patrol over their task force in the Sea of Japan. When they broke through the clouds, they spotted the contrails of 7 Soviet fighter planes, and we're going to pick it up right there.
At that point, the flight leader, who was senior to me, had a problem with his airplane, and he was told to take his wingman and remain over the task force. And I took the lead of the flight with my wingman, a guy I had never flown with before, and pursued the, well, I, as they flew over the top of me, and they were at extreme altitude and all giving contrails, that smoke trail behind them, cloud trail, I identified them as MiGs. And they said, that's your target. It, when they flew over me, they reversed course and headed north. So I flew in that direction, getting further and further behind them, but climbing. And when they got to 26,000 feet, they split in two groups, 103 and 104, and turned in different directions, either to bracket me or decide to go and land or something. But I lost sight of them at that point. And so did the radar operator. So they gave me a command to come back and establish a barricade between the last sighting and the location of the task force. And in that turn, there came four of them in, and they were all shooting at us. And they missed, and as they went by, I kicked in a lot of rudder and wrapped the airplane around and dropped in behind their number four airplane. And with a short burst, he dropped out of the out of the formation and started going down. I didn't know it right then, but my wingman left me and pursued the airplane going down. The others climbed in an amazing way, showing off their greater capability than anything I had.
So I want to understand here. At this point, your wingman has chased the other guy. You've already shot down one of the seven, but now you're up there one on six, and you just said their capability for the MiG was greater than your Panther. So you're one on six with an airplane that's inferior to theirs.
That's correct.
Did that hit you at the time, that the odds were not in your favor?
Well, I didn't plan on this. It was a complete surprise. And I just went on gut tuition and training, and I knew I was in a fight. I was actually told by the controller, do not engage, and I reported that we are engaged. I couldn't just turn tail and run. It wasn't my job, for one thing, and besides that, I probably for sure would have been shot down. So I pursued these three that I already had in sight, and they went high above me and then reversed and came in head on. And so I fired at the first one coming in. He was shooting way out of range, and I fired where it was about in range, and he broke off. But his wingman came in, and I think I nailed him. He just came straight in and non-maneuvering and passed underneath me. And from then on, they were not formation. They were just taking their turns of the five airplanes left now and attacking. And my job was, I was a fighter pilot, and I knew how to maneuver against a lesser airplane. But the roles had been reversed, and I was now the target with superior numbers and better airplanes coming against me. So I was in a turning defensive fight. And they came in one after another, and I would just do what I could to spoil their aim. As they'd fly by, they did what they should have done, to put their nose up and just pull up, and I would not have the capability to do that with my plane to chase them. But in some cases, they made a mistake, and they went out ahead of me and turned flat, in which case I wrapped the airplane around and was able to get shots at them.
Had you ever had any kind of experience like this before?
Training. But my training was pretty much the role that they were playing against an adversary that was probably a multi-engine, slower or something like that. And I was in a more maneuverable airplane and kind of doing what these guys were doing now. But I was a reverse role.
So slowly but surely, over more than 30 minutes, you're picking off one plane at a time. 35 minutes engaged with seven MiGs in this dogfight. How long did it feel like? Did it feel like longer than 35 minutes?
No, the time was sort of compressed. I was just busy, and there was no time to just look around. I was doing a lot of looking, but then I'd see a guy on my tail, and I had to counter him, and then the next guy, and just went on and on until I finally had an... Well, I'd shot down another new because I could see the parts fly off him, and I had to pull the airplane around to avoid hitting pieces of the airplane. Then I had another one smoking, and I was trying to pursue him when I saw a MiG come in on my tail, and then trying to avoid him, he hit me with a 37 millimeter right in a vital part of the airplane and went through the wing and into the accessory section of the engine, and it just wiped out. I had cables to the rudder were shot away, and all the hydraulics were gone, and I basically just had an elevator as the control available to me. And he settled in behind me. I was out of ammunition at this point anyway.
So you're out of ammunition, and your plane's not working right.
Right. It was way out of trim and hard to fly. So I was using two hands on the control stick and heading toward the clouds. And this guy settled in right behind me at a perfect firing range. And he was just shooting, and I could see both the 23 millimeter and the 37 fly over me and under me as I was pushing over and pulling back and upsetting his aim. So he wasn't getting to me, and I got in the clouds and he lost sight of me. And I headed back to the task force.
And you're describing this story. You lived it. You've told this story a few times. Maybe it's... It's not
recently, because I was not permitted to talk about it. So 50-some years went by before I told anybody, and that included my brother or my wife or anyone.
Because this engagement was not to have occurred between American fighters and Soviet fighters?
Well, I suppose that was part of it, but I was told it was because this was the first engagement of a new authority and capability, NSA. Everybody knows it today, but this was its first operational mission. And it was aboard a cruiser, the Helena, right off Vladivostok. And with their sophistication and language capability, they had these guys from the time they took off from the field, the Soviet Army Air Force, and through the engagement, and they said until the remnant came back. And so they didn't want to disclose that we had something new in this capability.
Mm-hmm. So that was the first operational mission?
For the NSA operational group, the people that were on the special mission on this cruiser that were monitoring the Soviets.
Got it.
And they had the total picture of what happened. Mm-hmm. And they're the only reason that I knew how many airplanes I shot down. Other than that, I'd see hits and that sort of thing, but I didn't know how many actually were shot down.
You're just trying to survive. You're not keeping score.
That's right. So I didn't know. I have flash remembrances of a lot of it that all pales in, but later on after the Cold War, the Soviets, now the Russians, released the information, and I have the names of the four Soviet pilots that were shot down.
Is that a sobering thought to look at those names?
Yes, yes it is. Yeah.
But if those four weren't shot down, you would have been, in almost certainty, right? And you probably should have been.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'd say if God wasn't on my side, I'd be in the bottom of the ocean off Vladivostok.
Well, and really, I mean, we think about that. Here you've got, you know, you're outnumbered 7-1. They've got better airplanes. And then your plane is disabled and out of ammunition, and there's a guy right on your tail. In those moments, did you think that was it? Did you think there was any way you were going to escape that and survive?
Thinking is an odd thing to say, but I was just busy doing what I was doing, and I don't know, I suppose hope was built in. But I was just totally involved in doing the best I could. And I probably had an adrenaline high and shock after I landed, which was a feat in itself. But then I was talking to the chaplain later toward evening, and that's about the time it set in.
I imagine so, and you said something a moment ago that you had God on your side, and maybe the landing is one of these moments, but what are the moments along that way where you look back and say, yeah, God must have been looking out for me?
There's no doubt. It's sort of like David and seven Goliaths.
Boy, that puts it in perspective, doesn't it? But we haven't heard about the landing yet, or the keynote remarks from the Secretary of the Navy at the special ceremony in San Diego this past week, awarding the Navy Cross to 97-year-old Royce Williams. We'll get to that when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.